Morning, everyone. My name's Steve Maslin, as Michael said. I'm a partner with Grant Thornton, and I've also spent a good part of the back end of my career representing the global audit profession, looking at developments in reporting, corporate reporting, and accounting, the developments that are going to come down the track. Now, unlike Robert, who gave that really slick presentation this morning, who gives presentations as his day job, I don't. So I get quite nervous sometimes when I'm addressing an audience of people I don't know. So I got some really good advice earlier on in the week from a global investor called Mark Olson. And Mark said, Steve, it's simple. When you go into the bathroom in the morning before your presentation, convince yourself that looking back at you is a 6'4" blonde Adonis with the world at his feet. And I tried that out this morning, and it was going quite well until my wife came into the bathroom. She said, darling, what are you doing? And I explained to her, and she said, look, you're barely 6 feet in your socks. That Grecian 2000 is in the cupboard for a reason, and I've had better offers this week. So that's kind of burst my bubble a bit, but Michael and Al have said that you'll be a sympathetic audience. My session's got a lovely title, Cultural Change, Business Model Shifts, Impact on Accounting. It's one of those kind of nebulous titles that fortunately doesn't pin me down to anything too specific. And Michael gave me the brief to talk to a room full of management accountants and academics, saying something controversial and stimulating. Now, as you'll see, I'm neither a management accountant nor an academic. So I'm in grave danger of doing what the audit profession is often accused of doing, of delivering my brief exactly and saying nothing of relevance. But just hold with me for a little bit, because I'm going to talk about developments in corporate reporting, but I do hope to convince you that there is stuff of relevance here, particularly for management accountants, because we're increasingly seeing the boards of large companies looking to their management accountants to help them explain their business model when they're talking to investors how that business model is going to create sustainable shareholder value. And we're seeing some other companies going even further as a result of that discussion and engagement with their investors, going back and re-engineering the way they're looking at performance drivers in the business. And in the second half of my presentation, we'll look at about five or six examples of businesses doing that. And for the academics here, we're now starting to see some academic research from overseas where schools are starting to link certain types of corporate reporting and good corporate and integrated reporting with increased share price. So I looked at the value of companies listed on the UK Stock Exchange this morning. It's about £4 trillion. So I just leave you with the thought that if you can do some research that is linking effective, good corporate reporting with higher share price, that might be something of commercial as well as academic interest. So I hope we'll try and find something for everybody. I'm going to try and talk for about 40 minutes, leave some time for some discussion at the end. Equally, if people don't like what you're hearing, have challenges or questions, that's fine with me as well. But I want to run through four propositions. First, that globalization has created vast increase in complexity of business models, and that's putting a real strain on accounting, and Robert gave a good example earlier on. But second, whilst financial accounting is under strain, it's still important to users. It can't explain all the information needs from the business, but it's still valued. Third, that I think the way that businesses are going to move on with their corporate reporting is to supplement the traditional financial accounting model with more and more meaningful management narrative in their corporate reports. And that to remain really relevant to user needs, that there's going to have to be a change in culture and philosophy, the way that companies use corporate reports, from something that's done to investors to something that's going to entice them into a richer discussion about the business model and value creation. And as we go through, just to ask you to think about this quote. Any intelligent fool can make things bigger and more complex. It takes a touch of genius and a lot of courage to move in the opposite direction. So let's think about complexity. Accounting is generally realised in every country outside of North Korea, which claims it invented, but everywhere else in the rest of the world reckons that accounting was invented in the 15th century in Venice by Luca Pacioli, when Venice was becoming the world's commercial powerhouse. The city merchants invested in ship's captains who went off to new markets and came back with new goods. And accounting was a form of understanding what was the profit from each voyage. Now, if we compare the relative simplicity of that model with a company today like Google, Google generates about $75 billion worth of revenues from about 100 countries. It's got thousands of investors and a paper worth of about £500 billion. And moreover, when we look at many modern companies, we think of large companies today, the profit and their value is wrapped up in intangibles. We simply can't see what their worth is. If we take a business like HSBC, it produces an annual corporate report that's over 500 pages. But I'd suggest to you there's probably no one inside or outside of HSBC who's actually got a handle on everything that company does. Yet whilst these business models are increasing in complexity exponentially, we're still relying on a 500-year-old basic accounting system. And cultural differences, as we touched on earlier on, Robert, are important to understand. So when a user in one country looks at a set of financial accounts, they tend to be expecting different things from it from those in another country. So in the UK, accounting was really built up in the premise of stewardship going back to the days of the joint stock companies. I'm an investor, I'm looking to the accounting to see how you, the professional management, have looked after my money. US accounting is underpinned by different concepts, sometimes called decision useful information. So how do I value this share? In Germany, traditionally many businesses were owned by the state banks, and under German accounting, the German businesses were allowed to tuck away surpluses in good years into secret reserves to be used when there were harsher economic times. And German investors tended to accept there was a certain amount of lack of transparency. They couldn't see what was in these reserves. Because they felt, probably wrongly, but they felt it made for prudent companies, and that would be a benefit in the longer term. Yet all of these competing user needs are getting wrapped up into a single set of international accounting standards that are supposed to mean the same things to all sorts of users. And I think another really important cultural shift to get our handle on is just the speed at which decisions are taken these days, and the financial crisis showed us that. And I would argue that traditionally the way that bankers solved banking collapses for the last 100 years or so is that they just come out and declare that the emergency is over, they wait for panic to subside, confidence return, they overvalue loans and assets in the balance sheet, but they wait until the banking system can make provisions against those loans over future years. Now, the financial crisis in the age of communication made clear that was no longer going to wash with investors. And there's a real tension between investors who want transparent information now and people like regulators and banking supervisors who feel that providing the markets with too much information too quickly is a threat to stability. And we accountants are still wrestling with the bankers on how we deal with that in accounting. And my GPPC group has got a meeting next month in New York with some of the G20 central bankers, just trying to wrestle with that some more. And this tension, regulatory creep, got so bad in 2009 that there were some central banks after the crisis that were trying to make it at one point a criminal offence for banks and their auditors to genuinely put a value on sovereign debt. If we invent a purely hypothetical country and call it, I don't know, France. And that was an example of a regulator trying to turn accounting, which was there to give information into the markets, into something entirely different, which was to help the issue of stability. So we got these complex business models, cultural differences, different user needs, and it's all placed a terrific strain on the accounting. And back in April 2002, I was volunteered by the large networks to go onto BBC World and argue the case for the adoption of a single set of global accounting standards, IFRS. And it was the day before the European Parliament took the decision to adopt IFRS for listed companies in Europe. And I went on and gave this presentation about how ridiculous it was that the week before a company, I think it was BMW, had reported three sets of results to the markets, one each under German, US and international accounting rules, and the profit swing between the different standards was over 100%. And I argued that if companies adopted a single global accounting standard, that would increase investor confidence, and that in turn would help to drive growth and employment. And I still believe that was true, but 14 years on, I think we've got real problems with the ISB and the way that it's setting international accounting standards. And I think new standards are coming onto the blocks now companies have to comply with that are based on conceptual purity rather than things that are going to encourage companies to improve their report performance and to increase investor understanding. So we've got these more complex business models, we've got competing user needs, different cultures, all put a strain on the accounting, which has in turn sort of caused the financial accounting model to be a bit of a foul-smelling witch's brew. And that brings me on to my second proposition, that despite all of these strains, financial accounting, the traditional corporate reporting model, is still of value to investors. It's not the route to answering all information needs of the markets, but it is still valuable. These are just two accounting. These are just two accounting stories that were in the press when I was putting my slides together. So Valeant is a US drugs business. It declared that it overstated revenues by about $50 million the previous years and tried to argue that wasn't a big deal on global revenues of $10 billion. But that accounting error has caused the markets not just to question the controls and disciplines within Valeant, they're now starting to attack and question the underlying business model, and that stock has been shorted ever since. Adobe was a company that got terribly excited and thought it was reporting good news into the markets because profits had increased. But because it was changing the way it presented that information and the accounting KPIs it was presenting, it caused a stir with investors, and actually share price has been suffering. A few years ago, when I chaired the GPPC, we commissioned Forbes to carry out some research of all sorts of users and stakeholders across the world of what they thought of the corporate reporting model. Forbes went and interviewed about 400 key stakeholders, and about 150 of those were institutional and sovereign investors. And there was just an amazing consensus in the views of those users. Nearly all of them said that they wanted more from corporate reports. They wanted corporate reports to do a better job to shine a spotlight on the relative strength and health of the company, and that moving on, perhaps use of new technology could enable us to talk more about sort of systemic issues within particular sectors. But their number one sentiment was that traditional accounting was still something they placed huge reliance on. So it's important, and I'd argue that this is my PA's slide. I don't know what sort of website she goes on, but I would argue that the need for companies to produce an audited financial statement imposes disciplines and controls that benefit the company and investors. And probably the most important comment I hear from investors around the world, a complaint, is that whilst the annual financial statement is very important to them, they're becoming too long, too complex. They're certainly not an easy or an enjoyable read. And I put up that publication, which is something that my firm has produced called Telling Your Story, with just some tips on companies and how they try and reduce the complexity in financial statements. So that's the end of my second proposition, that despite all of the problems, financial reporting, financial accounting, the annual corporate report is still useful and highly relevant to investors. One French investor put it to me that we don't expect to learn anything new from the annual corporate report, but it is the bedrock on which we judge all the other information that the company produces. And if we can't reconcile that information back to the audited financial statements, then that sends a warning signal. It's important, but it can't use the traditional model, all of the new evolving user needs from the markets. And so to my third proposition, I think the way forward now is to see much more meaningful management information and other narrative to be going to supplement the financial statements. And there are now dozens of examples around the world where different bodies have picked up this idea and are trying to provide supplementary information to the traditional financial statement, corporate report, to make it more meaningful. And I just want to spend a couple of minutes picking on three from this slide. So the governance code here in the UK, integrated reporting led by the IIRC globally, and FEE's paper on the future of corporate reporting. FEE is the EU collective of accounting institutes. The UK Governance Code has introduced three important new developments in the last few years. First, listed companies now have to produce a strategic report, and the aim of the strategic report is to try and make a more cohesive link between the front end and the back end of the financial statements, linking up the business model, strategy and governance with the financial accounts. A second development is that audit committees and auditors now have to give an enhanced report. So auditors, for example, now have to say in their audit report something about the scope of their audit, what they regard as material, what sort of things they would bring to investors' attention, and what are the key judgments that underpin the main numbers in the financial statements. And thirdly, a viability report under which listed companies are now having to talk about how they're securing the company's viability and future, not just for the next 12 months, which traditionally they're required to do, but over the business cycle, which could be 3 years, 5 years, or 10 years. And to analyse that, I would recommend the Grant Thornton 14th Annual FTSE 350 Corporate Governance Research. It's the only research which tracks UK governance performance and reporting developments in corporate reporting since 2000, and it's referenced by the FRC as authoritative guidance in the area. And our research enables us to work with dozens of FTSE boards, not only talking about trends in the major companies in the UK generally, but benchmarking the way that they're presenting information and their governance performance to the FTSE as a whole and to other sectors. The early indications, I think, of these developments from the FRC is that they're being welcomed, but they're certainly not leading to shorter and clearer annual reports. The average length of a UK FTSE annual report's gone up in the last 9 years from about 100 pages to about 160 pages now. But I think generally some of these developments are being welcomed by investors. Particularly interesting is the enhanced audit reports and audit committee reports. I think we've got Nick Reed from Vodafone later on today. That was an earlier adopter of enhanced audit reporting, and that's been very well received by investors. Another example to look at, I think, is Rolls-Royce. The auditor, in that case, Jimmy Dabo from KPMG, has gone further than many auditors and is starting to give some flavour of his view as auditor at the relative prudence or imprudence in the accounts. But I think there are two findings from our research that should be of particular interest to this audit. The first, our assessment, is that whilst the back-end numbers, the traditional financial accounting piece, those numbers tend to be pretty tight now in FTSE companies. The other information at the front end about strategy and business model and what the real business drivers are really, really woolly. And I think there's a really important time now for management accounting community to think about how they can play a more meaningful part in translating how businesses' performance is measured internally to give confidence to the stock markets that your company's business model is one that can create genuine, sustainable shareholder value. And the second one is I think, should be of interest to everyone. And again, it's this issue, Robert, of culture and the importance of culture. Now, despite our earlier conversation, how vital that is for any investor to understand what the culture or the logics of a business are, you ask investors in VW and Toshiba how important that is. It's a tiny minority of FTSE chairs that accept any responsibility for embedding the cultural mindset and evolving good cultures and logics in their organisation. We're seeing some companies now, the best companies, developing hard metrics on culture, things around customer complaints, risk appetite, customer satisfaction, whistleblowing. And my firm is working with a couple of financial services organisations on what they can do after the financial crisis to learn lesson and to move culture into a better place and to measure that and then present it ultimately to market. But these companies trying to put some hard metrics and real disclosures around culture remain a minority. So let's start looking at some examples. This is an example of a strategic report. It's my firm's first attempt. I think it's a fairly digestible document. It's about 40 pages long. It's fairly short paragraphs, charts, diagrams, pictures. And we set out in our document, our strategic report, how we intend to create sustainable value over the long term. And our premise is that we're choosing to build our firm around our clients and our people, not just our partners, because it's our clients and our people that determine whether we have a valuable business over the longer term. And we've set out our purpose. Our purpose is to play our part in shaping a vibrant economy, and that's underpinned by three pillars: building trust and integrity in markets, unlocking sustainable growth in dynamic organisations, and creating environments where businesses and people flourish. Because it's our belief that focusing growth on those three pillars will lead us to more sustainable and more genuine growth and profitability, rather than just focusing on what we can squeeze out next year with a few extra margin points on audit and tax or advisory. And the sorts of things now that we're starting to measure and will be reporting on are things like, how do the growth of our clients compare with the growth of their peers? Are we genuinely adding value to such businesses? What percentage of profits that do we earn are we putting into a bonus pool to be shared with our people? We think they're going to be important value drivers in our business. And I liken now this move of moving corporate reports from something that analyses the past into really trying to think about how business models drive sustainable value. To this bloke, I'm a sports nut, anybody knows me knows that. So Johan Cruyff was the greatest footballer of his generation. But the thing you had to understand about Johan Cruyff was he had absolutely no interest in winning football matches, but he was passionate about playing great football. And that was his higher purpose. It was that thing, because he had no interest in winning football matches, but was interested in playing great football, that's what meant that the Ajax and Dutch football teams that he played in were so phenomenally successful. And I've just been starting to work with a new client, the FTSE board, and this particular company is renowned in the investor community for the quality and depth of the financial analysis that it provides into the market, analyst briefing. But it's badly lost its way in the last 18 months. It's lost market share, it's lost shareholder value. And it produces really excellent reports that analyse how it's performing, in this case pretty badly, but absolutely nothing on what are the real fundamental drivers of long-term sustainability. It hasn't created a purpose beyond making a profit next year. So I'm trying to work with that business to really get under the skin of longer-term performance, things like customer satisfaction, R&D, how innovative are its people to make sure that its products are staying ahead of technological developments of its competitors, and then to bring in the right measures for that business, and then to move that into the corporate report to hopefully restore some investor confidence. Now, for this audience, that must sound like the statement of the obvious, but it is just amazing when you go to corporate FTSE analyst presentations how much is talked about analysis of the past and not what are the real value drivers of tomorrow. So the FRC has, I think, done a pretty good job in trying to get better linkage between the business model and financial accounts in terms of, you know, how's a business driving long-term value. But I think the most important development in this space right now is the integrated reporting that's promoted by the IRRC. The idea of integrated reporting is to move reports not just beyond just supplementing traditional financial accounts with more relevant management information, but something that gives a truly cohesive picture of performance and the ability of the business model to provide sustainable shareholder value, taking account of all the important issues that it faces and which have an impact on longevity, and enabling investors to get under the skin of the organisation in a concise way to enable quicker and more reliable decision making. An integrated reporting is going to have much less emphasis on financial accounting and much more on things like human capital and the impact on the environment. And here's why I'm convinced that this is a really, really important development, because the chap on the slide there is Larry Fink, and Larry Fink is the CEO of BlackRock, which is possibly the world's largest private institutional shareholder right now. And Larry Rock has just written to the CEOs of the S&P 500, the 500 largest public companies in the world, demanding that there's a better linkage in future between their corporate reporting and strategy and sustainability. And we're seeing really major shareholders now like BlackRock, like CalPERS, which is the Californian pension fund, which I think is the biggest state investor at the minute. Many analysts' organizations, Charles Institute of Financial Analysis, all pushing the world's largest and most successful companies to produce integrated reports which link the traditional financial accounting with sustainable growth. We're seeing a number of overseas stock exchanges like South Africa now mandating a new type of reporting, of integrated reporting. We've got some people here from the public sector. UK Treasury has just issued guidance for public bodies in the UK, strongly encouraging the publication of integrated reports. There's a really strong regulatory and investor push in this area. And this is one of my favourite examples, GE. GE has revenues of just over $100 billion, but it has just produces its integrated report into the markets in just 65 pages. And GE's chairman, Jeff Elmwell, promises investors that his priority is to provide meaningful information to investors that they can readily access. And Immelt is positioning GE as the business model, as the company which is moving to become, in his words, the digital industrial. And the sorts of things that, GE are putting in there, what are their long-term investment strategy in markets such as India and China? What its long-term plans for product innovation? How is it going to go managing the business model through the cycles, doing upturns and downturns? How's it providing succession through a young leader program? Diversity, how is it making sure that it's getting diverse thinking into the boards and throughout the organization? And a really good report on remuneration and how remuneration incentives in the organization are linked to long-term creation of sustainable shareholder value. And GE has received a lot of investor support, not just in terms of getting an understanding of performance, but for capturing the imagination of investors in GE's business model. And unlike many of those financial reports I read these days that really won't make you want to sort of tear your eyeballs out, it's actually a really interesting read. It's a really engaging read. Another interesting example I recommend to you is SAP. So SAP has been using integrated reporting, not just to change the way that it's reporting its results to the market. SAP, as a result of integrated reporting, is fundamentally re-engineering its internal business performance measures. So after a period of faster share price growth, about 8 or 9 years ago, SAP was suffering a stock market decline. And the accounting team went out into the markets, they talked to customers, they talked to their investors on why that was. And the message coming back was that it was really because SAP's own workforce was starting to lose faith in the SAP business model. And there was very high employee turnover. Now, that of itself was expensive, but the real problem for SAP was that it was damaging the reputation of the business model. Because which big organization wants to entrust its global ERP system to an organization whose own employees don't value its product? And that's caused SAP to completely re-engineer what it's regarding as important in its organization. And it started with people engagement, and it started with a single KPI, which was around employee turnover. And they've been driving down what really is going to make our business successful in the long term. And it's now generated 8 top priority KPIs. Each one of them are linked to people. Things like staff confidence in the business model, what staff think of their work-life balance. And this in turn has been driving not just their internal performance, then being used to drive what information SAP is putting into the market. And SAP's got a very clever internal reporting team of 10 management accountants and academics. And they've been spending time driving down on what the real value drivers for SAP. And they've demonstrated to the board of SAP that these 8 people-related metrics are fundamentally important and shown that a 1% move in any of these KPIs could impact SAP's market value by at least 40 million euros. So embracing integrated reporting has caused SAP to rethink about its internal performance measurement and the way it's reporting to the markets. I put up this one very quickly, Generali, because it's just another example you might want to have a look at. Generali has moved its corporate reports from 120 pages down to 20 pages. And a lot of that financial analyst that's required by IFRS, you've got a link to the website, but it's condensed its key information down into 20 pages. And I've put this booklet up from Crown Estates. Crown Estates is a really good example of how integrated reporting can be embraced by public sector. And it's produced a very, very easy to read 10-page booklet on Crown Estates' journey of how it went from fairly opaque reporting to producing integrated reports that are really well received outside the organisation and in the board's view is helping it to improve the way that it's performed. And it just goes through its journey of what things it's measuring, how it's measuring them, and how it's presenting them internally and externally. And the last report I wanted to draw your attention to was this one from FEE called The Future of Corporate Reporting. And I think FEE's main contribution to the debate is to get businesses to think about how their business models and their reporting needs to stay ahead of technology developments. So just one example, once upon a time, if you had a lousy experience on an airline journey, you'd write to or you'd phone up the customer complaints department. And there's no point doing that anymore now, because they'll just ignore you or fob you off with something, because you're just one person and they're really not interested. But many airlines these days have banks of people monitoring social media. So what you do these days is you go into social media, something like Twitter, and you start a conversation about your lousy experience with X airline. And if you can get a conversation going very quickly, you can find hundreds and thousands of people sharing your story about your bad experience. And that's just one tiny example of how technology is going to disrupt businesses and change what's really important in terms of value drivers internally, and get people thinking of changing about, therefore, what information they need to be presenting to the marketplace. So that was my third proposition, that corporate reporting is going to have to move on for adding to the traditional financial reporting model more meaningful management analysis, and hopefully in due course integrated reports that join everything up cohesively. I'm not going to spend a lot of time in the time we got left and the fourth proposition, but just think about how corporate reports should be used in future. I think there's going to be much less, there should be, for the good reporters, much less focus on the absolute precision of the IFRS numbers in the income statement and the balance sheet, to painting a much broader canvas of information for investors to give them information. Things like culture. How's my organisation going to convince its investors that it's not going to suffer a catastrophic loss of value in the way that VW's and Toshiba's did? And I think the really successful corporate reports and businesses of the future will be changing the philosophy of corporate reporting from something that's done to investors, you send it to them, they spend weeks reading it and it goes on a shelf, to something that's enticing them in for a much richer discussion with the board about how exciting your business model and how it's going to generate sustainable shareholder value over the longer term. So, Michael, that's nearly it for the formal part of my presentation. As I said, complexity, pace of change is really putting a strain on accounting, but the traditional financial accounting is still important, but it can't be the total answer to investor needs. And we're going to see more reports, I think, supplementing this with relevant management information and narrative. And we're going to need to see a change in the philosophy of the way that those reports are used. And I do believe these ideas are relevant to this audience. For management accounting, I think the management accounting profession's got a real role to play now in thinking their boards through with their boards, how they're going to provide real information on the real long-term value drivers into the markets, and then listening to what's happening to market sentiment and think about, are we really valuing the things that's going to provide, make us successful in the longer term. And I'm not an academic, but £4 trillion is quite a big number. And I would suggest now that if you can pick up on some of this research we're seeing from overseas. University of Singapore is a very good example of linking particular types of corporate governance behaviours and corporate reporting to higher share price. I'd find that academically quite interesting, and it might be commercially quite interesting as well. So I put on a glossary of texts. If anybody wants to go back and look at some of these things some more, I particularly recommend the GE report. I think the SAP report is an interesting one about how a business is re-engineered its internal reporting. The Crown Estate's document, the public sector, really interesting example of a public body that's in the vanguard of changing reporting and increasing its business performance as a result. And I put a couple of links to the academic research in there. It's about 43 minutes, I think, Michael. I'm going to stop. Thank you very much.